Blockbus.net Podcast Network.
They're back together again. Eric and Jeff are reunited as friends. All Movie BS is back together again.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, the only podcast on the internet about movies. Brought to you by oneofus.net. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, here with my co-host, Jeff Bear.
Hi, I'm Jeff Bear. I am the host of Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. That was my co-host, Eric D. Snyder. And don't worry, we'll get to all the hot takes about Kevin Durant potentially creating the greatest starting lineup of all time.
What?
What the Bulls are going to do with Dwayne Wade and how he's going to commingle with his... And don't forget, now what are the Thunder going to do? Are they going to be rebuilding? Are they going to be moving on?
This is all so exciting.
It's making the championship didn't matter as much as this offseason. It's quite joyous.
Well, I agree that the championship didn't matter. I'm making all the faces that Kristen Wiig would make when she was that character of someone's aunt reviewing movies on Weekend Update.
Yes.
Hey, we have an iTunes review.
That's how we start the show
every week. Every single show, we begin with an iTunes review.
I thought you were going to say every stinking show.
Every stinking show, that too. If you write us a review on iTunes, we'll read it on the show in old-timey radio voice, as I will now do for this one by Craig M.N.
Hang on.
Hmm.
Old-time or old-timey? Which one do you prefer?
I think I usually say old-timey.
Huh.
Or maybe I say old-time. Yeah, I say old-time radio voice, but I say that something is old-timey, I think.
On with the show.
Craig says, I've been listening to this show since 2011 when I discovered the now-defunct Cascadia.fm. There's a reason this is one of the two shows from that golden era of Portland podcasting that still exists. Talent.
Aww.
Weird. He means us. Their reviews demonstrate how much they know about what makes a movie great, good, average, or terrible. I really believe they are the Siskel and Ebert of this generation. What can you expect when you listen to this podcast? Reviews that are fun, smart, and do not point you in the wrong direction. I have watched real gems I wouldn't have known about and been spared real stinkers. You really do enjoy living vicariously through them when they go to movie festivals like Fantastic Fest, Sundance, or Cannes. I'm very thankful that I can listen to this show every Friday. It is something I look forward to, and I think you will, too. Thank you, Jeff and Eric. No, thank you, Craig M.N.
Craig M.N.? Big fan.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan of his.
The other of the two shows from the golden era of Portland podcasting that's still around is Fun Employment Radio, which, one, I did not realize was still around. Because I don't listen to any podcasts, nothing
right,
except.
Right, right, right.
Nope. But also, I looked it up. They're still doing their podcast 5 days a week.
Whoa.
Yeah, they're up to like 1,600 episodes or something.
Oof.
Greg and Sarah over at Fun Employment Radio.
We got to step it up.
I don't see any reason for that. No,
there's definitely no way.
No, we need to give up. We can never compete with that.
Oh, that does sound more. Oh, yes, that's my speed. That's it.
So thank you, Craig M.N., for the iTunes review. And anyone can write that, and one of those will read it on the show.
Well, not just anyone.
Just about anyone. Anyone with an iTunes account.
Yeah.
Who writes in English. Actually, no, you go ahead and write us a review in Spanish. I'll read it on the show.
You'll translate.
Old-timey radio voice. Old-timer, old-timey. Now you've got me wondering how I say it.
This is like what the catcher does when the guy goes up to the plate, and he's like, do you breathe in or breathe out right
mm-hmm.
before you swing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Old-time radio voice in Spanish. That would be funny.
It's an idea that could be funny.
Yeah. No, it would be funny.
Just saying that it could be.
Anyway, let's review some movies. First up, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates.
And that's pretty much, that is the plot. We find out they need these wedding dates because...
The title's a pretty big spoiler.
Yeah. their little sister is getting married. And why would somebody need wedding dates? That doesn't make sense. You don't need them.
You don't need them, yeah.
You want them, maybe.
You want a date, yeah. Who needs a date? Well, now the movie makes it clear.
Yeah.
They do, because Mike and Dave, by the way, that's Adam Devine from that Workaholics program, and Zac Efron from High School Musical. or Mike and Dave, they're brothers, and they have a history of...
Bit of a track record.
Track record at family gatherings, weddings, and so forth, of making trouble. They don't mean to. They're just fun-loving guys who tend to wreck things. And so their parents, Stephen Root, and I don't remember who the mom was.
She was very familiar.
She looked familiar, but I don't...
Stephanie Percy. What, Great Outdoors. That's it. That's how I know her. She's John Candy's wife in The Great Outdoors.
Oh, wow. There you go. Anyway, tell Mike and Dave, hey, you two numbnuts need to bring dates. So some nice girls who will keep you in line and make the wedding not be a disaster, because it's a destination wedding in Hawaii. They got to go for a week. So Mike and Dave obviously put up a Craigslist ad to look for wedding dates. And who do they find?
A couple of train wrecks.
Alice and Tatiana, Anna Kendrick and Aubrey Plaza. Who are kind of, you know, in some ways, the female versions of Mike and Dave. There's some heavy drinking party girls. They, you know, want a week in Hawaii. Sure, why not? So they all wind up going. And
I'd say that the main difference between them is Mike and Dave think that they're nice, and Tatiana and Alice probably know that they just don't care about being nice.
They know that they're train wrecks and they're fine with that. But yeah, they know that they are.
But otherwise, yes, quite similar.
Also, Alice, Anna Kendrick, was jilted, left at the altar, so she's has some PTSD about weddings.
She does.
So they all end up in Hawaii, and
there's a cast of characters, including a very competitive cousin named Terry.
Yeah,
that gets
cousin.
Under Mike's skin quite easily, and she gets under some skin.
Yeah, she does.
Sorry.
Yeah, she does.
Okay.
The first part of the movie I thought was very funny. It's crass and vulgar, but I really like Adam Devine and Zac Efron's chemistry together. They look like brothers, first of all. Like I buy them as brothers, and the way that they play off each other, especially when they both are outraged, they get into a high dudgeon over something, and they're what?
It's very good, especially when they're dealing with their dad, who is just like so desperate for his boys to finally grow up,
right?
He's pretty good about it and everything. Like he's still. Keeps loving them, but at the same point, he's just like, you're numbskulls.
Yeah.
And they are.
Mom says, when are the two of you going to grow up? And I wrote it down because I realized, oh, that's the theme of about half the movies we see. Mm-hmm. When are the two of you going to grow up?
Yes. And dates will clearly do that for them in the parents' opinion.
And then
not the best sought out plan.
No. And then at the wedding that week, the joke kind of becomes, and the conflict kind of becomes, that the girls are not a positive influence on the guys. But it's not quite the joke. That's not quite.
I know.
I was looking for, okay, what's the conflict here? What's going to go wrong? And okay, they're causing trouble too. But it doesn't quite gel into like a really cohesive idea for a story.
It's not kicking on all cylinders, but the funny keeps showing up.
Keeps being funny.
And it's from a variety. Like you never know who's going to kind of win that scene.
Kumail Nanjiani shows up as a masseuse named Keanu.
Yes, and it is good. But there is some basic my God, do we really need Zac Efron to talk about like how his goal is to draw full time selling liquor
for a living? He says I'm going to quit the liquor selling job and draw full time. And I thought. Well, you know, there's more to it than just drawing full time. Someone has to pay you to do it. Like that's how jobs work. Like you can't just do that.
Yeah. And there's some weird decisions, like when the girls decide let's do this ATV Jurassic Park tour thing instead of the dolphins. It feels really forced in that they're trying to move a plot forward.
Right.
You don't even know exactly what plot they're moving forward.
Well, yeah. What is their motivation? Why don't they want to do, why do they want to do the ATVs instead of the dolphins? And is that just to show them kind of taking control and taking over? Yeah. It doesn't really gel. In that sense. And a lot of the humor depends on the delivery. It depends on the way that Efron and Devine and Kendrick and Plaza deliver their lines. If you don't find their personalities and what they're doing funny, then a lot of it, you won't laugh as much as we did.
That's right. But they are funny.
They're saying funny things,
and they're getting into funny situations, mm-hmm. and it moves along quick enough to where it's one of those shrugging shoulders at the plot and just being like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
I'll move on because you're making me laugh. And we see so many times in these comedies where it's like, I'm not going to shrug my shoulders. This is just annoying that you're going down this path. And it never felt annoying at all. It just felt almost easy at times. Like it kept feeling like plot wise, they were taking the easy way out.
They could
have worked a little harder.
For sure. Yeah. It's a little bit, we talked about this with Central Intelligence last week that it's not annoying, and it's amazing how many comedies, screw that up.
Yes.
Where it's like, you don't have to be constantly making us laugh every minute, but just when you're not making us laugh, don't irritate us.
Perfect example. I can't remember the name of it. Reese Witherspoon and Sofia Vergara.
Hot Pursuit.
There you go.
Last summer. Yes. That's a good example of a terrible, annoying.
It was stupid and it wasn't funny.
Stupid and grating and irritating. Yeah.
Right.
And
This is fine.
Yeah, it's pleasant enough to hang out with. Again, assuming that you have a threshold for vulgar, raunchy R-rated comedy,
definitive language, and then some
vulgarity and sexuality. Assuming that you're okay with that, then yeah, it's a very easygoing, pleasant enough, good enough movie. I give it a nice B minus.
I think I 7.
All right.
Maybe it was a hint more enjoying than you, but just a hint.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, it's solid stuff.
And by the way, that Sam Richardson.
Sam Richardson?
Yeah.
Who are you talking about?
Eric, the fiancé.
Oh, the guy. Yes. I didn't know the actor's name. Yes, from Veep.
From Veep, from Neighbors. Part
Neighbors,
Due.
Too. Do you think he'll always have a white girlfriend?
Maybe that's the thing. But gosh, his delivery in general.
He's the fiance of the sister who was getting married here.
He doesn't do it as much here as in others. Like, he's funnier in other things than he is in this. Veep being the ultimate. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sick of his comedy one bit.
No, he's very funny. Yeah. And now I'm just noticing, by the way, this was written by the guys who wrote the first Neighbors and directed by Jake Zemanski, who directed... 7 days? 7 days in Hell, the Andy Samberg tennis mockumentary from last year, which is hysterical.
It's about an hour long and it's on HBO. And if you haven't seen it,
I assume it's still on HBO. Yeah, Seven Days in Hell, very, very funny mockumentary directed by the same guy. There you go. Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. And then also The Secret Life of Pets. It's a cartoon.
To cartoon by the people that did Despicable Me and the Minions and all that crap. Is that getting close to crap? I think it's getting close.
I think it's more than close.
There was an animated short before this featuring the Minions doing some lawn work and
lawn mowing. Yeah.
There was nary a joke to be had.
There were jokes
that really charmed.
Those weren't good jokes. That cartoon came from a dark alternate timeline where Looney Tunes never existed.
Yes, absolutely.
And where joy is a lie.
But anyway, The Secret Life of Pets.
But then, once you've sat through that short, then it's The Secret Life of Pets, which they were very smart to call it that. And all the marketing. Have you seen the trailer? I know you avoid trailers generally.
I have not seen it at all. What's up?
I did happen to see this one, and the trailer plays on what the title suggests, which is that it's all about what pets do when you're gone. Which is a funny idea, and you feel like there's potential there, and like the pets having a house party while the owners are at work.
You know what?
Hmm.
That reminds me of the beginning and the end of this movie.
Yeah, because it turns out that whole that angle is really only in the first couple of minutes. There's a montage of mischief that is pretty much all in the trailer. Pretty much all what the trailer shows of the pets misbehaving once their owners leave. That's all there is in the movie. And then after that, it is an exceedingly generic cartoon about talking animals having adventures in the big city, making it one of like 3,000 or 4,000 such cartoons ever made.
Not only okay, so it is that, and it just seems to have plucked whatever maybe in the last decade has kind of worked, whether it was a Puss in Boots with the cute cat eyes, or in Up, the desperation for a ball. Mm. Like, these things are just
all the stuff that we've seen animals do better in other movies.
And it's really
Pixar movies.
And at the core of it, we have Max. We have Max, voiced by Louis C.K. And is there anybody that enjoys this man more than me that you know?
No.
I suck up everything that he does on his teat, practically.
Right.
I enjoy his comedic genius, his mind, the way it works. I'm a fan.
Right.
I've seen every episode of Horace and Pete. You don't even know what Horace and Pete is. Not
nope.
You. The you.
I kind of don't either.
All right. So he is worried that his owner, Katie, voiced by Ellie Kemper.
Louis C.K. isn't worried. The character he voices, Max, the dog.
Yeah.
He's worried.
Max is worried that this giant dog named Duke that his owner just brought home is going to take over the joint. Mm-hmm. And he's going to get rid of him before the tables turn.
Right.
And there is then the unlikely friendship that is attempted to develop, but there is nothing there to endear you to Max.
Well,
there's nothing there to endear you to Duke.
No, not at all. They're both before the friendship, though. They're forced to cooperate when they get lost.
Right.
On their first day home together, the professional dog walkers out with them and the other animals from the apartment building, who we're not going to pretend they have personalities. Any of them, because even the main characters, like you said, they don't. Max is happy. I mean, he's a terrier or something, so he's happy to begin with, and that's kind of it. But then he's a jerk to Duke.
He is an
absolute
jerk.
Duke is a jerk first, but then Max does not respond well. And then they're lost together and working together. And when the movie was over, I still couldn't tell you what Duke's personality is. Like, in a few words, describe what sort of character he is.
He's a big dog.
Nothing. He's nothing.
But that doesn't. And it's really weird. When Duke shows up, it felt like it was about to do a bit. Like, maybe Duke would be one of 10 dogs that like come through the apartment and Max keeps figuring out ways to deal with them or something. It didn't feel like, oh, this is the full story that I'm about to witness. These two together, because they don't have anything they're trying to overcome. It's not like Max is afraid of the outside world and Duke has lived it. So then Duke reluctantly will teach Max.
Or directly with this is a ripoff of Toy Story. It's not like, I mean, Woody and Buzz were well-defined rivals, but who were both well-meaning. They had different philosophies, but they both were well-intentioned, and we sort of understood who they were, and then they were put together. But these two dogs are both just blank-faced nobodies with no personalities, and they're not – neither of them is really in the right. They're both kind of jerks.
And then there's Kevin Hart, who he had some spunk, I guess, as Snowball.
He's a bunny. He's a rabbit,
tiny little white bunny that was neglected, and now he kind of runs the underworld of all the flushed animals, so to speak.
All the lost pets who now have an underground resistance movement.
Yeah. And so then he's got a lot of henchmen and
doing his Kevin Hart thing.
And he tries to chase down, and sometimes it's kind of odd where how did Snowball find Max and Duke easily? Who's chasing who, and why is this all interesting? And what's really weird is it's an amazing slate of like voice talent here. Eric Stone Street plays Duke. Then you have Kevin Hart. You have Jenny Slate. You have Ellie Kemper. You have Albert Brooks. You have Lake Bell. Dana Carvey shows up doing
grumpy old man. Yeah,
which for people our age, it's amusing because you wonder who they hired to do the grumpy old man that Dana Carvey invented in the 80s. not invented, did on Saturday Night Live in the 80s. And then at the end of the movie, you realize, oh, it actually was Dana Carvey
doing the old voice.
But it's Hannibal Buress, Bobby Moynihan, Steve Coogan.
Yes, they somehow, this animated big budget, big studio film managed to hire lots of famous people to be in it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And the animals in the movie, you could tell there was some hierarchy of intelligence to where some animals are freaked out by a vacuum passing by. Like that can herd pets having a party.
Yeah.
That can get them all out except for the ones we care about because they're not bothered by the vacuum, I guess. So there's not really like a definitive logic of, yes, this is a secret life of pets.
No, not it doesn't make any sense. All the pets in this apartment building have easy access to one another's apartments through like the windows and fire escapes. And because I guess nobody locks their doors. I distinctly remember the wiener dog just turning the doorknob and coming in.
That's right. But here's some good news. Snowball and some others talk a lot about killing owners.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that way you have that to charm your kids who you've taken into this movie so they can be entertained.
Albert Brooks is a hawk. And I thought it sounded like Albert Brooks, but then I thought there's no way Disney would let him do this, you know, the same summer as he was in Finding Dory.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Apparently they don't own Albert Brooks. Albert Brooks is his own man. This is just really uninspired, just very bland.
And speaking of that uninspired, there's obstacles that get in the way during this film. And when they do, my main thought, and I'm curious what yours was like, oh no, it's longer until the end because now we've got to clear this obstacle.
Yep.
Like it kept feeling like that. And again, not giving your main characters like fears to overcome
or something or personalities
or personalities. It's just such an odd choice for a kid's movie for them not to have a goal besides, oh, we should survive and get back.
I don't see how anybody looked at this story and thought anything other than, oh, this is like every cartoon I've ever seen. Oh, some talking animals have an adventure in the city? Yeah, what about it? Like, is this a world with no humans, like Zootopia? Is it a musical? Is one of them a serial killer? Give me something.
No.
Yeah.
I give you nothing.
Very, very bland. I give it a C-.
Oh, I am. It is the perfect description of super bland to me, so I give it a 5.
All right.
Speaking of super bland, that is not how you could possibly describe Swiss Army Man.
You could describe it that way on opposite day.
Ooh, yeah.
But it's not opposite day. Opposite That's day falls point. On a Tuesday this year. Swiss Army Man premiered at Sundance early this year. All the talk, all the buzz. And I didn't see it there, though. But now I finally did see it.
Yes, we did.
In theaters. What I remember at Sundance was that some people walked out of it, were offended, whatever, thought it was too weird or whatever. Which, whatever. But then somebody wrote an article in...
that was some good use of whatever.
Yeah. Somebody wrote an article in Variety or Hollywood Reporter asking something like, is Swiss Army Man the weirdest Sundance movie ever?
I remember that. That's right.
And those of us who have been at Sundance a few times... Or really even that one time, we're like, here, let me name 10 other movies off the top of my head. Like, it's weird, but it's not like, it's not the weirdest thing in the world. But it is weird.
Now that you've seen it.
Now that I've seen it. But yeah, it's not, you know.
It's definitely weird, and I could see somebody saying, well, that's the weirdest movie I've ever seen.
Sure.
But it's not the weirdest movie.
Not somebody who's seen a lot of weird movies, I guess.
Yeah. So
because the thing is, while weird things happen in it, the movie itself, like the narrative of it, is very straightforward. Like it's not like it's surreal or cryptic or anything or hard to follow or anything like that.
It occasionally made me feel like the ground was loose underneath me, and I was like, I wanted to make sure that I was understanding things correctly.
Yeah.
But it's a movie that once you go ahead and give yourself over to it, it does not confuse or confound. It just delights.
You just have to go with it. Yeah, it's we have Paul Dano plays Hank, who is stranded on a small desert island, and at the beginning of the movie, he's about to kill himself finally because he's bored. And then a dead body washes up on the shore, played by Daniel Radcliffe.
That's right.
And Hank's life changes forever.
The end.
Well, I mean, the thing, no. What kind of did surprise me, this became known as the Farting Corpse movie. Mm-hmm. It's the movie about the farting corpse. And the people who loved the movie saying, oh, but it's so much more than that. That's reductive, and don't be dismissive of it. And people who didn't like it saying it's just a farting corpse movie. I was surprised how immediately the corpse begins to fart. Like, but before we've even seen the title appear on the screen, already kind of what was the only thing I knew about it, about jet skiing around in the water propelled by the power of the corpse's farts.
Right.
Like, that happens immediately. And then the movie goes so many more interesting directions after that.
There's very interesting things that are happening in the sense of, if you allow yourself to think, what in the world could this title mean? Swiss Army Man.
Mm-hmm.
As in, a corpse washes on shore for a man who's deserted on the island. And there you go from there. There's a variety of things that they do in this film that are quite entertaining, quite fanciful, and... Yeah, you don't want to give away some of the joy here in the discovery. But on top of that, there's like a lot of slight philosophical talk about like what it means to be connected to the world, what it means to be alone.
Oh yeah, to be alive. It's very right. existential.
Yes.
Loosely, the Hank begins to talk to the corpse, and the corpse begins to talk to him. And it's not Hank is kind of in his own little world anyway. I love that he makes his own musical score sometimes.
Oh my goodness,
which I love.
the pleasure that gave me, and especially when it's like him doing some topical things that you almost want to start like humming along.
Right.
When he does these things,
familiar tunes. So they begin to talk, and that reminded me a lot of like Waiting for Godot or something, one of those existential philosophical plays where people just kind of sit around talking. And they also are traveling. Hank is trying to get to civilization, and he's dragging this body with him. And so, yeah, he uses the body for things. Sometimes that's funny.
And
using
like,
it as a tool.
Like most things, it's slightly about a girl. Slightly.
Yes, yeah.
And the desire there. And I really did. I liked a lot of it, and I never felt myself 100% overjoyed on board. But man, I kept being so dang close. And there was some things that I know this is going to sound weird.
Oh, good.
But there's something that happens with an erection in this movie. And I didn't like the comic sensibility of how the erection was shown.
Like depicted visually?
Depicted visually.
What do you mean? Oh, the way it was sort of like squirreling around?
Yeah, there was some weird movement.
Yeah,
it really didn't behave
the way that those things generally do.
And I know that's so weird, but it somehow... it somehow was like, well, I wish they would have done something different.
They should have done that more realistically. Yes.
And it was weird that I was sitting there thinking about that.
Obviously,
but I was.
Obviously the corpse's boner serves as a compass for Hank. Obviously.
Obviously.
It's one of those stories. I was into it all the time and certainly never bored by it. But I never quite fell in love with it overall. I loved certain things about it here and there.
You know, it almost felt like a movie that somebody could fall in love with on the level that I've fallen in love with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. But for whatever reason, it just didn't happen for me that way.
Yeah, it just didn't quite click.
Yeah, I did really like how Hank communicated to the corpse about humanity. Like, because, again, the corpse at times doesn't understand anything.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah, the thing is, as the corpse is talking, he doesn't remember anything about his life or anything, or about not just his life, but life at all, how the world works.
Yeah.
Hank is explaining
it
to him.
It's a whole lot of like.
Mm-hmm. I like a lot, and you should absolutely see it because you certainly will not see very many movies like it.
No, you won't.
I give it a B+.
It's an 8. BS approved.
BS approved. Well done, Swiss Army Man. And now it's time for Question of the Week. In honor of that wedding movie we talked about Mike and Dave.
Mm-hmm.
We asked, what's the story from a wedding you attended that would make a good movie?
We wanted to know. And a few of you told us. Jeremy.
I think weddings maybe in real life are not nearly as entertaining as weddings in movies.
I am starting to agree with you, especially once I started to think about what my answer would be. Nice. Yeah. Jeremy says, at my wedding, my best man knelt to put the garter belt on the bridesmaid and promptly split his pants wide open. Whoops. Before we knew what had happened, he bolted through the ballroom side door in embarrassment and found himself in the middle of the hotel kitchen, his unmentionables on display. We eventually caught up with him and got him some replacement pants. Surprisingly, my best man was not played by Kevin James. I love replacement pants. Replacement pants is just very... Oh, that's right.
Replacement pants.
You think the word pants is hilarious.
Pants is generally a funny word anyway. Yeah.
Replacement pants is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, replacement pants.
Don't worry about it. I got some replacement pants. Everything's fine.
That is a good story. You probably could make a whole movie just about that, I guess.
That's it. This is what I've now realized.
We can make anecdotes,
We can make moments. We cannot make a whole movie out of anybody's wedding, apparently.
All right. Now, Lynn says, back in 2012, my husband and I were hosting a Russian exchange student, and I was a bridesmaid in my best friend's wedding. I left early in the morning to get all bridesmaided up, and the husband and the Russian son were to show up later. About 30 minutes before the wedding, I get a phone call that they are broken down on the side of the road. The bride sends limo to get them so they can be there. They get there about 5 minutes into the wedding, just in time to see one of the other bridesmaids pass out. This was my husband's and the Russian son's first ride in a limo and the Russian son's first American wedding. All right.
I like the idea of this turning into, like, the Russian son, like, going crazy in the limo and, like, joyriding.
Oh, maybe,
And then, like, they're trying to get to the wedding. Something like that.
Because it feels like it's starting to be one thing after another. Like a series of things going wrong. We just need to add a few more of those things going wrong. Like, then maybe the best man's pants split. That's what we'll do. We'll combine all these into one movie.
And then, Ryan says, I'm a photographer, and this is from one I shot. It was a very traditional conservative Christian wedding held in a church. The whole day was super low-key, and a couple was very sweet. There was no alcohol served and nothing else that could have explained what happened toward the end of the dancing, which concluded at 7 p.m., by the way. Everything was normal, and then the DJ turned down for what? All hell broke loose.
You know what I'm going to do right here? I'm going to edit in a bit of that song so people will know the song we're talking about.
Nice. Turn down for what? People were losing their minds, and several of the older couples started freaking on the dance floor. One teen laid down on the floor and started convulsing like he was having a seizure. It was the most bizarre and hilarious moment that I had no clue was coming.
That's nice.
I hope there was like a reason that they all cared about this. Like collectively as a group, this very quiet, this group of people. Like, for some reason, this was their...
This was some kind of inside joke with them or something, Ryan didn't know.
Yeah, I like that idea.
I'm gonna ask Ryan if this was a Mormon wedding reception. Concluding at 7 p.m. is what gave it away. Because, you know, if you start, like, at 4 in the afternoon, you just go for a few hours and then you're done. On a Saturday? Yeah.
It's crazy talk. If I'm still not enjoying myself with a wedding at, like, 2 a.m., it's not a good wedding.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't enjoy any Mormon weddings. Daniel, is this what I'm reading? Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He says two answers, but then he only gives one answer.
I know.
So I don't know what happened to your second answer.
You can't be distracted with that sort of thing.
Daniel. One time the bridge and groom, probably the bride and groom, one time the bride and groom were delayed to their reception because they were in a car accident, crunched on both ends, if you know what I mean.
You know what I mean. Nice.
They were both fine, just late. Yeah, that's not a very good story, Daniel. What's your other story?
You know, it'd be great is if they hit another car going to another wedding, but then the couples like switched. It was a story about the couples like
accidentally,
because that's the device where you like in a romantic comedy you bump into somebody with
maybe
the car.
The brides already have the veils over their faces.
Oh, you think it's mistaken identity. They don't mean to marry the other.
Yeah, no, I think they accidentally. Yeah, they
everybody has a concussion, but because the weddings are paid for, they're just moving it forward. That's right.
Right.
That's right. And then Emily says, I've been to receptions where a toddler peed under the table.
This is, by the way, these are definitely Mormon wedding receptions.
Oh, really?
Go ahead.
Where a kid threw up on the father of the groom, where it looks like flower girls are pretty much bathed in the chocolate fountains. Maybe titled Wedding Crashers Toddler Edition. There could be something to that, concept of just this big group of friends who they were always the life of the party. And now they're all 35 and have kids and they're going.
All have toddlers.
They're going to the last one's wedding. Mm. And they they can't party, but they decide to lose their minds. But then the kids even lose their minds even more.
Right.
Done.
I can see that.
Done.
Yeah.
Sold.
Let me ask you this. You, as someone who has been to primarily not Mormon wedding receptions.
I've been to one dry wedding, and I did not care for that.
Right. Do people other than Mormons, would they bring kids to a wedding reception?
Some people bring kids. And
okay.
It's as long as you're containing your kid. And then the idea is like that kid needs to be there for some reason because of the close proximity. Oh, wait, that wasn't the question.
I'm not asking for your opinion on whether people should bring kids. I'm asking whether they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But, I would say like now that I'm almost 40, it's happening a lot more. Whereas the weddings that I was attending with my friends, like sometimes people are like, yeah, we got sitters for the kids. If you have kids.
Right.
You take them to this hotel and put them in that room.
Sure. Now that we're at the age where all our friends have kids, there's more kids everywhere.
It's a little bit more understanding. Yes. Now that I've experienced something, I tolerate it better.
Interesting.
Interesting how that
Weird.
Works. World.
Huh. Fascinating.
I was trying to think of a story, and it's really weird how I had nothing here. Somebody did split their pants. Because they, at my wedding reception, they created a makeshift slide where there wasn't really a slide and pants were torn. One of my friends at, one of my really good friends' weddings, he was like, yeah, I'm going to go get a quick haircut and then, I'll be right there. And he was so late.
A haircut, like the day of the
wedding? He was in the wedding party and that was it. And he was like, yeah, I need a haircut. I'm going to go, into town and get a haircut somewhere. And he did. And he was late. Like we were all waiting for him to get there. And when he showed up, he had the worst haircut we had ever seen, including just like when you take a trimmer and just like accidentally bump the trimmer into the head, like there were just chunks of hair missing. It was really bizarre.
Wow.
Like this old guy gave him a haircut and it was just terrible. And anytime you looked at him, you just died laughing the entire night. It was glorious. It was so good.
That's great.
Yeah.
I really have no interesting wedding stories.
I was thinking another good one would be like an idea for a movie. You're going to a dry wedding and there's all these different friend groups that are going. Mm-hmm. And each one is like, oh my gosh, it's going to be dry. What do we do? So like, there's these four friends that do this, this seven family, you know, people over there, and all of them are choosing and reacting to different drugs,
doing different things. Oh, okay,
like you got your drunk group, you got your ecstasy group, and so on, and
pot
group, yeah, heroin.
Right.
Clearly, grandma's over in the corner doing heroin,
man.
because she's retired and she feels like she finally deserves it.
Well, good for you, grandma.
Yeah. But that could be amusing.
I'll tell you, last summer I went to a wedding reception where the bride is an actress and performer, and many of her friends are theater types.
Oh, boy.
And so for her reception, she had a friend of ours put on a show, like got people to do, you know, perform various things, and I did a song.
Nice.
And it was a really fun show, and it was a fun wedding reception. I think it's the only wedding reception I've ever enjoyed.
Oh.
Because it was actual like entertainment. There was stuff going on.
Yeah.
Including me. I was great. I killed them. what's the question week for next week, Jeff Baer?
What fictitious town would you most want to live in? What fictitious movie town would you most...
Fictitious movie town, yeah.
What fictitious town from a movie would you most want to live in?
There you go.
And that was from Patrick, our listener Patrick. Thank you once again for a brilliant question of the week. Unless nobody participates, and then that's all on you, Patrick.
Yeah, I think brilliant's a strong word. It's a good question, though.
It is. I like it. Mm-hmm. I think I have my answer.
Oh, all right.
I don't have my answer. Wait. No.
You can always email us at moviebspdx@gmail.com or just post it on Facebook.
If you're always curious, if you're sitting around and you're always curious about us, just go to moviebs.com, mm-hmm. and that'll help start your procedure in getting to know us a little bit better.
Now, speaking of question of the week, we have a perk. We've introduced a reward for our Patreon campaign.
Patreon campaign? What's that?
Well, that's the thing we launched a couple of weeks ago. I'm glad you asked. Where we're trying to see if people will pay $1 a show.
$1 a show.
$1 a show. And you don't have to, of course. The show isn't going up behind a paywall. Show is still free. We're doing it for free still, but we're just like putting out the tip jar. And so we're hoping in time for Jeff's 40th birthday, which is next week, you guys.
Oh, goodness.
We're hoping by then to have 40 people to have each pledge $1 a show. Now, here's the thing. Here's the reward. Obviously, the reward is you get the show, but you get the show even if you don't, if you're not a patron. So, new reward. If you're a patron, you have the right to demand that we read your question of the week answer on the show.
Yep. And if you've already contributed, you're absolutely allowed.
Oh, yeah. No, this is retroactive for those who have already signed up and for future signers up. But yes, if you're a patron, just indicate in your answer somewhere, indicate that you're a patron, and we'll say, oh, okay, that one gets read on the show. No matter how dumb or stupid it is,
we'll read it.
So there you go. That's a little perk. As a patron, you are entitled to demand that your question of the week answers be read on the show. It's just a small token of our appreciation. Hey, Jeff, want to play a game?
I do want to play a game, yes.
We haven't played Character Casserole in a while.
No, we haven't. We should do that right now.
We should. Character Casserole works this way, everybody. We're each going to think of a movie, and we're going to pretend that those are parts 1 and 3 in a trilogy. Then we're going to make up what part 2 would be to connect them. Get it?
Yeah, I do. I get it.
Do you have a movie in mind?
I have a movie in mind.
All right, what is your movie?
Lady and the Tramp.
Mine is Inside Out.
Huh. It's kind of weird that we both have animated movies.
Probably because we were trying to think of good animated movies to wash the scent of Secret Life of Pets out of our brains.
Well, my son and I just watched Lady and the Tramp this last week. It was his 6th movie of all time. Number 6.
Lady and or the Tramp. Did he like it?
He was okay with it.
Yeah.
It had moving pictures in it, so he liked that part.
It did, yeah. It has talking animals.
Yep. And there are times when only 6 movies, but one of the few questions he asks about movies when we talk about watching them, he asks if the animals talk in this one.
Oh, good.
Like, do the animals talk in this one? Like, there we go.
All right. So Inside Out and Lady and the Tramp. So
let's put Lady first, Lady and the Tramp first.
Well, Inside Out, the end of Inside Out hinted at there being little emotions inside of dogs and cats.
That's
too.
Right.
So we can go from there. Maybe this sequel then gets into the emotions inside of animals' heads.
But would it specifically be like Tramp? Maybe. Just get the thing. Tramps on the street. We don't ever know what Tramp's life was like as a puppy.
There we go. Yeah. Now we find out. Yeah. This is. Maybe. And maybe Tramp can be young Riley's. She doesn't have a pet in Inside Out, does she? I don't think so.
No.
No, they get her a dog. And so we're going inside of her dog's
head. There
we go.
That's the sequel.
Yeah. And so the dog, let's see, emotions. We'll have to continue the Inside Out thing. The dog's emotions, though, are all about food.
No. One would be food.
One would be squirrels.
Yeah, squirrels. One would be balls. And then, obviously, love, the companionship of a human.
It's human, yeah.
Yeah. That's the big one, is the connection with the human. And that's the one that then gets busted.
Maybe Tramp was a stray already when Riley got him.
Okay.
And he's having trouble getting used to having an owner.
And what what about this? Because he was astray, he doesn't have love.
He doesn't have that one. So is it his food emotion that runs him? So
he's got he's got everything else, but
food,
he doesn't.
Food, by the way, is Bobby Moynihan.
Good job. Oh yeah, yeah, that works. That works. So yeah, so everything he's got hate. He's got food,
right?
And whatever, but he doesn't have love. And then love shows up in the brain, and everybody is like rightfully afraid of
who's
love.
Who's this?
Right.
Who's
my goodness. Being afraid of love. This really is. Oh, man.
Is love going to be a male or female figure in the dog's brain?
I mean, female.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Because love is feminine.
Or is it just simply joy? is it joy? Because it's like an inside out. Is it just like that? I mean, not Amy Poehler, but is it joy?
No, because it's different.
A dog's love for a human is
more than just joy. Because a dog also feels joy in chasing the ball and all the other things.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Love is something else. Okay, good. Yeah.
I like this. And then love becomes so big it bursts or something. And that's then like his brain explodes. at least the emotions within explode. And that's why in Lady and the Tramp, then it never gets into that sort of thing.
He runs off to be a stray again.
Well, that's why we never go inside his brain.
Right.
In Lady and the Tramp.
But so you're saying that this movie ends with him like running off again.
Well,
he's got to be alone. He's got to be alone.
No, he doesn't run off. What happens?
He's abducted.
Oh, goodness. Is he tricked? Is he bamboozled?
Well, the point is somehow he ends up alone again to be in Lady and the Tramp. Is that that's got to happen either at the end of this movie or between them.
No, I hear you.
This is going to be a sad movie. This movie's going to end with Tramp leaving his family.
Oh, my gosh.
But you know what? It's okay because Riley also, meanwhile, has learned something.
Oh, maybe Riley learned that she has cancer and she dies.
Wow. Well, yeah, all right. I mean, they already went pretty dark with the stuff that happened Inside Out. They already do dark stuff in these Pixar movies.
Man, I'm not going to like me for a while after that. It feels low. Poor Riley.
So this sounds pretty good. Riley gets a dog, gets cancer, and the dog runs away.
Yeah. Never to trust humans again until, you know.
Practically writes itself.
Until Lady,
And it's called, Inside Arf. Inside the dog's head. Inside a dog's head. That's a very attention grabbing title for a movie. Inside a dog's head.
It's true. Done.
Yeah. All right. That's how you play character casserole.
That's it. That's how you do it, people. Yeah.
Maybe that's why we don't do it very often. Because terrible things happen.
Poor Riley.
Oh, poor Riley.
Why didn't her parents? It's just they should have checked or something. I don't know.
We'll mention it serves a formality. We still have the summer box office challenge going on. Mathematically, Jeff has been not eliminated, but for all intents and purposes. But I had the BFG last weekend, and it didn't do very well. It actually did the third best of the three new releases. Neither of us chose The Shallows or the other one, whatever the other one was.
Purge?
Not Shallows. Is that what I meant?
Yeah, no, it wasn't Shallows, was
no,
it?
No, Purge.
Tarzan.
Purge and Tarzan, yes, that's right. Shallows was a week before. Neither of us chose Purge or Tarzan, and those both made good money. So if you weren't already out of it, this would be an interesting development where my choice, BFG, kind of underperformed. That would be an interesting twist were it not already over.
It's just Finding Dory.
Yeah.
That's so upsetting.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah. And that's the end of the show. Well, we're just going from one downer note to another. Hey, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. It's pretty funny.
It's light. It made me kind of, Deadpool's forgettable. Mike and Dave might be forgettable, but for the moment, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then The Secret Life of Pets is really generic and bland. It is in color and brightly lit. I mean, your kids will enjoy it. We're not saying your kids won't enjoy it.
Right.
We're saying it's not very good.
We're saying your kids are kind of idiots.
Well, all kids are idiots.
Right.
You know that. You know how your kids are idiots.
Yep.
I need us to tell you.
That's why I'm not letting him see cars, because he's going to really like cars.
Right. Well, but you're not stopping him from seeing cars either, because, like, who's trying to get him to watch Cars?
Well, eventually I'm going to let him watch it. I just want to get other movies in his system first.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. You're not letting him watch it, because no one's trying to get him to watch it right now.
I don't know what people are doing when I'm not around. Then again, I'm always
around.
You're
always around, yeah.
I'm always around.
You're taking a stand here that means nothing.
That is his first therapy session. He's always around.
And then Swiss Army Man is easily the best farting corpse movie I've seen this year. Wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Name one better farting corpse movie. See? No, best one ever.
I can't. You're right.
Best farting corpse movie ever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, I agree when you say that.
For the question of the week, tell us what fictional movie city you would like to live in. Until next week, for Movie BS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.